Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Anti-Theft Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, I mean, you may remember that a few weeks ago, we got a call from a young woman who was in jail.
No, Yale. She was at Yale.
Oh, sorry.
She was a student at Yale. Yeah, New Haven. You got it. Okay.
Right. Anyway, she had a crummy old car with nothing in it, and still someone broke her window.
Right, and she wanted to know what to do in the future on the main streets of New Haven. And we said, look, leave the glove box door open, put a note on the window that says, I'm a poor student, I don't have anything you want. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, we got a note this week from Jeff Rigby, who had a similar experience. Here's what he says. In the 1980s, I lived in New York City and owned an older BMW, which I parked on the street. Every night, I would remove the radio, open the glove box, and put the standard note in the window stating that the radio was removed and nothing of value was in the car. You can imagine my disappointment when I returned to the car one morning to find the driver's side window broken and a note left by the thief that said, just checking.
You never know.
You cannot win.
Trust honest people. Well, look, if your window's broken or you have some other car problem, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Jamie. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have a 1991 Toyota Tercel.
Wait, you said your name is Jamie?
Jamie from Albuquerque.
From Albuquerque, that's right.
Got you. You're going awful fast. We got the 91 Tercel, and I'm still working on spelling Albuquerque, but I'll abbreviate.
What's up?
I'm losing a lot of oil. I lose about 2 quarts every 600 miles. I've already replaced the valve cover gasket on my car, and I bought an oil pan gasket to replace to try and see if that would help. My question is, am I on the right track, and what do I do if that doesn't fix it?
So,
how much oil did you say you're losing?
About 2 quarts every 600 miles or so.
So a quart every 300 miles.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot, but it's not as bad as Tommy's Fiat. are you sure?
I lose a quart, no miles. Just sitting there, it just loses it.
Right, he had his car parked in a parking garage in Harvard Square, and they called the EPA on him. Anyway, I question whether or not it's leaking or burning or maybe some combination. Do you see when you've parked the car or let it idle for a period of time, do you see a big puddle underneath that grows the longer it stays there?
Well, the problem is I live in an apartment, so I park just kind of wherever in the parking lot. And same thing at work, I don't have a spot. So it's hard to tell for sure. I do, not every time I turn on my car, but a lot of times when I turn on my car, there's a kind of grayish cloud that comes out the back.
That's where most of the oil, I mean, you could, as an exercise, change the oil pan gasket. But
okay.
I don't think it's going to amount to a hill of beans.
Really?
No, it's more likely that the oil that you're using or disappearing, the oil that's disappearing is coming out the tailpipe.
What can I do about that?
Well, you could put a coffee can back there and hope that you condense it back into oil.
It's not likely that it's going to work.
No, you can do nothing about it.
No.
But the fact that you have a car that's, you know, closing in on 20 years old.
Right.
You know, and
well, I guess that's kind of another question I have is, at what point in time do I give up on my car? It's not worth paying a mechanic. It's so old, so I've just been fixing stuff on it myself.
Well, the problem is, in order to fix this problem, it's going to cost a lot of money.
Right.
How many miles are on this thing at this point?
It's got about 134,000.
134. Have you tried any of the magic elixirs? Because there are various products on the market that claim to subdue oil consumption.
I haven't. I haven't heard about it.
Well, this is the first step, then.
Yeah, this is absolutely the first step. Return the oil pan gasket.
Okay.
I even though that may be leaking some, I doubt that that's the lion's share of the consumption.
Okay.
And you're going to buy a product, if you can find it, called Restore.
Restore.
And if they don't have that, buy two or three other products with similar claims. And you'll find one. It's possible that maybe your rings are stuck.
Okay,
or maybe you have some leaks from some seals, and these products do help a little bit, but don't go changing any oil pans. So the other place these things always leaked was something called the oil pressure switch, the thing that sends a signal to the light inside. But if that's leaking, that's a simple matter of unscrewing it and putting a new one in.
oil pressure switch?
Yeah, do that before you do the oil pan. Find it first. It's right next to the oil filter, I believe. And you can put your hand under it while the engine's running, and if you feel that it's wet, then change that thing. And that may account for half of that consumption.
Okay.
Who knows? Good luck.
All right.
Call us when you're ready for a new car, right?
Yeah. We'll talk to you next week.
Sorry.
Bye-bye, Jamie.
Bye. Thanks.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Wow, I'm on with the movie stars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's us.
We were in a movie?
I saw your movie the other day when I was waiting in the dentist's office.
Oh, you saw Cars.
Yeah.
How do we look? We look good?
You look great. You know, I'm from the home of all that stuff. I'm from Orlando, Florida. My name is Rick.
Hey, Rick.
And I drive one of those very rare and exotic cars. You hardly ever see them on the highway, called a PT Cruiser.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Boy, that car was that caused quite a stir when it was introduced.
Yeah, well, I don't think they stirred it enough.
it didn't stir enough. And I knew it was destined to failure when all the young guys who stopped me in the street and asked if it had an 8-cylinder engine.
Yeah.
And I told them no. And then they said, well, it must have a 6. I said, no.
No.
They said, well, it must have a turbo 4. I said, well, no. I knew that they weren't going to succeed. But anyway, go ahead.
I've been having a lot of different problems with it. The one I'm calling you about is I park on an incline, and every time I start it, about a minute into the process, driving down the road or whatever, there's an explosion under the hood.
Really?
Yeah.
Evidently not big enough to cause permanent damage.
No, it's not a huge explosion. It's just kind of a backfire.
Yeah, it's a backfire, yeah.
Give us an idea of how old this vehicle is, how many miles are on it.
It's an 04.
04?
04.
About 50K.
Okay, so it's brand
50K?
New. It's brand new.
Yeah.
And give us the conditions under which the boom occurs.
First thing in the morning. Within 1 minute of startup.
And does the boom occur when you step on the gas or when you're just sitting there?
Usually when I step on the gas.
It sounds like a classic case of an engine misfire. These things have a reputation for having bad coils. And if you have a bad coil that's occasionally causing a spark plug not to fire, the next time that cylinder does fire, it'll send a spark and ignite that mixture, but also the other part of the mixture that escaped and is now in the exhaust stream. And never got combusted.
And boom.
And you get your boom.
Boom. But the boom seems to be coming from under the hood.
Yeah, that's exactly where it is. That's where the engine is, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, most of the engine is under there.
it's coming from under the hood, but it's coming from where the exhaust first leaves the engine.
Okay.
Okay, in the exhaust manifold. Or it could be backfiring even through the intake. You know, but the fact that it happens only once... kind of puzzled
once and we're done, until I stop it, let it sit, and start it again.
Are there any other conditions which can bring it about? For example, if you've driven it for an hour and parked it and come back and restart it, will it then do it?
Almost never.
But
not completely never.
So I'm thinking it's a temperature-related thing, and it has to do with perhaps a sensor that's not working up to snuff.
Okay.
Is it less likely to happen in real hot weather?
No.
You sure? I would have, Rick, that answer would have been really, really good. A yes to that question would have been really, really good.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Would you like to reconsider?
Would you like a lifeline?
We could make believe you have an answer.
How about 50-50? Well,
I took it to my friend Juan, who rebuilds wrecked cars, and he listened to it. And he verified that it really did sound like a backfire.
Well, you're going to have to take it someplace and leave it and let them corroborate that it is. And what they will do is they can put the scanner on it, and it will be able to tell, your computer will be able to tell the scanner how many times the engine's misfired, if in fact that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then you can address it, and I'm guessing it's the coil.
Okay.
I actually agree with my brother.
So I guess that I probably shouldn't take it back to my friend Juan, because all he told me was to call you.
Yeah, Juan might be the wrong guy. Yeah. You may want to try somebody with a scan tool.
Okay.
Good luck, Rick.
Thanks very much, guys. I love your show.
We love you, too. See you later, man. Take care. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Pam.
Hi, Pam. Hi, Pam. Where are you from, Pam?
I'm calling from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Cool. What's up?
Well, I have to go back a little bit. About probably 3 months ago, I was out of town. I came back home, and my 15-year-old daughter, who has her learner's permit, she won't get her license till next year. She was kind of doing the happy dance.
Uh-huh.
My husband, who I love my husband. He's like the greatest guy in the whole world.
But he's got a few demerits, I think.
Well, you know, his demerits are how kind and loving and generous he is. You know,
yeah.
That's not a bad thing. But
yeah.
He thought a good motivation for my daughter would be that, see, the soccer season was just starting out, and that if she would score 20 goals, she could have a convertible.
Oh.
We're at 16 goals now.
How many games are left?
We still have 6 games, and she's averaging about 1 per game.
Well, you know,
wow.
If you read any of the data, the most dangerous place, and there were more accidents that occur in the home. So I think she could easily fall down a flight of stairs, break her leg, and put an end to her soccer season. You can always hope for that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, oh, boy. So you want to know what kind of a convertible to get her, huh?
My thing is, she's a great student. She's a good kid. You know, she'll be a safe driver, but, you know, I want her to be in something safe. But everything that I see that's safe, it's like a Volvo convertible. I don't have $50,000.
Buy a used one. You can buy a used C70. Volvo convertible.
Uh-huh.
That car's been out for a while, and you might be able to get one pretty cheap.
Sure.
Any others that...
A Saab convertible, of course, you probably heard the bad news about Saab. They are going to be no more.
Yeah.
But if you get an old one, you're not really worried about getting parts for it because you couldn't get parts for the old ones anyway.
Right.
So it's not going to be much worse now that they're out of business. You know, and who knows? Somebody may come in. Some white knight may ride in and rescue them at the last moment. But you'll be able to get parts, and it'll be a small investment anyway if you buy an old one.
Do those older models, do they have, like, the airbags and all that?
Well, everything has the airbags.
Okay.
You know, but I'm more worried about a side impact, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you're not going to do better than the... Of course, you could go for my son's favorite. My younger son, when he was graduating from college... Thought for sure he was going to get an Audi TT convertible.
Oh, yeah.
She's already been talking about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we dashed those dreams right away. We took my son down to the garage. My wife was holding his hand, and we had placed in the middle of the garage floor a scale model of an Audi TT.
It was about 3 inches long.
No, it was about a foot long. It was very nicely done. Franklin Mint, I think.
It was the cruelest thing you've ever done.
No, not yet. But he got the point got driven home that he clearly wasn't going to get one of those for graduation. In any event, I would go and look for a used Volvo or a used Saab.
Okay.
So what's going to happen, Pam, when she scores 19 goals?
Well, you know, she knows it's got to be 20.
Yeah.
She's motivated, that's for sure.
She's motivated. Is she motivated enough to bribe the goalie on the other team for that last game? Like, hey, if I score 2 goals, you can drive the car. Okay, well, we'll see how it plays out, so to speak.
All right.
Good luck, Pam.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Joe from William Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hey, Joe. You couldn't decide where you were from there, eh? What's going on, man?
I live in Williams, but I'm working in Flag. It's a little easier.
Flag's good. It's more recognizable.
Hey, guys, I drive a 2000 three-quarter ton Dodge diesel pickup. It's got 264,000 miles on it, still going strong.
Beautiful.
But I got a problem.
But it's what you expected. That's why you bought a diesel, right?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
You expected to get 500,000 miles out of it.
Oh, definitely.
What do you do with this thing, by the way? You want to trade?
I'm a carpenter.
You're a carpenter.
Oh, beautiful.
So you need a pickup truck. You're one of the few driving one that really needs one.
Yeah,
very
so
true,
what's up?
Very true. This just started recently, about a week or so ago. You know, as I get the truck started and it's warming up, everything's fine, there's no fog on the inside of the windshield. But as soon as I get it up to operating temperature, the inside of the windshield fogs up, and you get the faint hint of antifreeze. I got a bad sense of smell anyway. So.
Well, when it begins to accumulate on the windshield, which it will do, it'll condense, the vapor will condense, you can try tasting it.
just to make sure.
Just a smidgen. Antifreeze has it, even though it is highly toxic and causes brain damage. You can just take a taste of it or even a good smell of it. And if it is sweet,
yeah,
it is,
take a smell, not a taste.
If it is antifreeze, you have a leak in the heater core.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I have no idea what it's involved in taking that out.
Well, I'll find out.
Yeah, you will.
Because you're going to do it. And you've got to do it because this is heater core season.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that you may have to take the dashboard off to get at this thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I'll have to. So
yeah.
It's a weekend project.
Yeah. And weekend and maybe 2 6-packs and you'll be all set. See you later, Joe.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Good luck, man. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, before we answer last week's puzzler, we need to take a short break.
Last week's puzzler, somehow it has slipped my mind.
Yes, it slipped on one of your many mental banana peels.
Yeah, well, give me a hint. It might be in there somewhere.
No, I doubt it, but let me see. All right, here is a hint. Since I came along so many years after you and our sister Lucille, Mom always referred to me as her little what?
Accident. The accident puzzler. I remember it now.
Oh, my God. You got it. Yeah, there was a head-on collision.
Yeah, and one guy was hurt, and the other guy walked away.
Exactly. And we'll be back with the whole story and, of course, the answer, and we'll take more of your calls, too, in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
My car used to drive like a dream. But just last week, the trouble started, you see. So I called the Malyatsi brothers for advice with my car troubles. And with the advice they gave, we all laughed. Hey, click and clack, I want my old car back. It used to drive like a dream, now it makes me wanna scream. Hey, click and clack, I want my old car back.
And even though Emily Post stabs her radio with the wrong fork whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was submitted by a fellow named Roger Darby, and it goes like this. Pay attention, because it's filled with lots of hints.
I'm ready. I'll be going over it with a fine-tooth comb.
Well, just try to stay awake. I'll be satisfied with that.
I'll try.
Good. Roger says, I live in rural Illinois, you know, way out in the sticks. I was driving home from work one very rainy day, and I saw a familiar car coming at me in the oncoming lane. I recognized this vehicle because I'd seen it many times around the neighborhood. It also happened to be the very same make, model, and color as my car. In fact, I think it was the same model year, too.
Same car.
Seems to be. Same year, same make, same model. Now, suddenly, without notice, his car started hydroplaning on the wet road, and before I could react, I noticed he was out of control and headed directly towards me. You okay?
Yeah, I just spilled some coffee.
Okay, here's a napkin. Unable to avoid the collision, we hit headlight to headlight. That is,
wow.
My driver's side headlight hit the left side headlight of his car.
That's a hint, isn't it?
Very good. You're right on top of things. We were both wearing our seatbelts and our airbags deployed. But I was injured to the point of being hospitalized while the other driver walked away pretty much uninjured. The damage to our cars was almost identical, so the question is, what explains the differences in our injuries? Now, I did add a few conditions. Neither driver had any pre-existing conditions. Neither was impaired in any way. We were both about the same height and weight. I wasn't carrying a hot cup of coffee between my thighs that spilled and required hospitalization. And the speeds at which we were traveling made no difference. So the question is, what's the major reason for the differences in our injuries?
Wow. Were you wearing your Bronco Nagurski football helmet?
No,
by any chance?
I was not. Well, look, I would imagine that an accident of this nature, where headlight to headlight hit, might result in a lot of broken glass and maybe the driver's side of the car being ripped off, right? The mirror and the door, and pretty serious stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's what's interesting. That probably did happen, and there was a lot of flying glass, and it did lacerate the driver of the who got injured. But the other driver didn't get injured because it didn't hit the driver's side of his car. You see, his car was a car that had been retrofitted for right-hand drive to be used as a postal delivery vehicle. So his driver's side of the car was the right headlight.
Of course.
Of course. So that car got all smashed up, too, but not where the driver was. Pretty cute, eh?
Boy, oh boy.
So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Jim Hiddle from Altus, Oklahoma. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Jimmy's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get a copy of our new CD of stories called Tales of the Brothers Grime. Close.
Now, these are stories that we've told on the air, like the time I was at a restaurant and accidentally consumed a birthday cake that was intended for some poor old lady at the next table.
You didn't notice that the cake said Happy Birthday Grammy on it? And that your name is not Grammy?
Picky. I thought it was a new nickname. What do I know? Anyway, Tales of the Brothers Grime also includes our first ever on-air duet of Goodbye, My Coney Island Baby.
Which, incidentally, was also our last ever on-air duet.
For reasons that will be obvious when you hear the CD. Anyway, the Brothers Grime collection is yours, Jim, if you want it, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Congratulations, Jim.
Now, we have a brand new Puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. But in the meantime, if you have a question about your car, you can reach us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sue, and I'm calling from Kimball, Minnesota.
Hi, Sue. Kimball, huh?
Kimball.
Must be cold there, huh?
Well, it hasn't been too bad. We had like the second mildest November on record, so...
No kidding.
Yeah.
Ooh, hooray for global warming.
I know.
So what's going on, Sue?
Well, I drive a 2009 Subaru Impreza WRX.
You do?
Yeah, it's really a neat car.
Yeah, it's pretty fast.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Well, see, I needed something practical for our winters, but I also wanted a sports car. See, I recently turned 40, so I'm kind of in that midlife crisis phase.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of combined the two, and that's what I came up with.
See,
so.
I'm in my 40s, too, and I did the same thing. I got myself a Fiat Spider. Of course, he's 40 years old.
Well, it's same idea, you know.
It's the same idea.
Same idea.
So what's your issue with this car?
Well, I don't have any issues. It's fantastic. But occasionally, I venture to a part of the state that's kind of remote. And because the car has a turbocharger, I can't always find a gas station that sells premium gas.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, I've seen these Octane Boost products, and I'm wondering, is it okay and safe to add something like this? And in a pinch, if I can't find premium, can I put in regular and then throw in one of these products, and will that be okay for the car?
Yeah, you don't even have to throw in the product.
No.
Really?
No. I mean, the premium is there. The demand for premium is there because you have a turbo.
Yes.
And because without the premium gasoline, this thing would ping.
Okay.
So when you step on the gas really hard, you engage the turbo, and you cram extra air into each of the cylinders, what you do is you raise the combustion temperature. So the lower octane fuels have a lower combustion point, a lower ignition point, and would tend to cause pinging or knocking on acceleration. And when that happens, the knock sensor retires the timing and diminishes the power, but it might not even be able to do it enough to prevent engine damage. But if you're driving in the winter, you're probably not driving like a nut job like you do the rest of the year. So if you're driving in snow and snow and ice, you're probably driving in a manner that doesn't use the turbo very much.
Okay.
And if that's the case...
In which case, just keep doing what you're doing.
Just keep putting the regular in.
Okay.
But
okay.
Does it say on your dashboard premium required?
It says 91 octane or better is preferred.
Preferred.
Yeah.
If it's just preferred, then you can use anything. I mean, there are some real high-performance cars that insist that you use premium. And it, for those cars, we agree that you probably should. If you spent $150,000 for a car, the last thing you want to do is take our advice and melt the engine. on the other hand, you didn't spend that kind of money. And even though 91 octane is not premium gasoline, it's kind of mid-range.
Right.
You know, you can get by using regular in a pinch.
Okay.
And I would refrain from doing this in the summer when the engine temperatures are higher and when you're driving the thing harder. But in the winter, when you're driving it gently and the turbo is not doing its job of compressing the air going into the cylinders, and you can probably get by just fine with the with the regular gas.
So you got maybe five months before you have to worry about it.
Oh, in Kimball, Minnesota, maybe 8 months.
Maybe 8 months, yeah.
See you, Sue.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227.
Do I have to worry about this with the feet? No.
No, the feet, no. I was going to ask you, when was the last time you actually put gas in the thing? Have you driven it enough to require another tank full of gas, or are you just siphoning it out of my car?
Well, I haven't paid for gas for as long as I can remember.
That's what I thought. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello. Hi, this is Shelley from the end of the road in Homer, Alaska.
Hi, Shelley, from the end of the road.
Feels like the end of the world this morning.
It does, huh?
What's going on, Shelley?
Well, we have a volcano that erupted a lot this spring.
Yeah.
It's called Redoubt, and it spread ash all over the place. And we used a lot of pantyhose and kept it out of most of the orifices of the house and the tractor. But I didn't think about the sunroof on my car. It's a Toyota Highlander sunroof. And I went to ratchet the thing back because we had great weather, and it kind of ground a lot and then died.
Oh, really?
And I used my compressor on it, and I tried getting up in there as much as I could, but it looks like you have to lift this thing out. Got any ideas on how I could get volcanic ash out of my sunroof? Oh.
Did you say you have to lift?
Oh, you want to take the whole mechanism off, the tracks and the whole business, so you can clean all the ash. So the ash isn't necessarily in the motor, because that's pretty sealed up. It's in the tracks.
It's in the track of the sunroof. And
well, how many days a year do you get real sunshine at end of the world, Alaska, or whatever you're calling from?
It was really a great summer, but now we're
except
down
for the
to
volcano.
About 3 hours of light.
No, it was a great summer. Except for the total devastation caused by the volcanoes.
Yeah, so it's definitely the light is short now, but
so what you'd like to do is just tip the thing upside down.
That would be good.
And shake everything out of it, and then put it back.
So when you blew out with compressed air, first of all, it's unlikely you burned the motor out. You probably just blew the fuse.
Well, it still makes a grinding noise, so I don't even think I've.
Oh, you didn't even
think I blew the fuse.
No. It makes a grinding noise, but it doesn't move.
It'll just go up and down a little ways.
But you're able to close it now and make it watertight?
Well, no, that's kind of the main issue. It's open about a quarter of an inch.
Oh, boy. Well, you might be able to coax it down. I'm trying to think what the best approach would be here. Because pretty soon you're going to come out one morning and there's going to be 18 inches of snow in your car.
Oh, well, that's this morning.
That was
too late.
Well, what you can try to do is have somebody hold the button while you try to push it closed. So at least if that's your short-term goal to get it closed, or is your short-term goal the same as your long-term goal to get it fixed?
I think I want to try and fix it.
Well, you need to go online and find out the procedure for taking this thing apart.
Yeah.
And you may be able to get it from Alldata online or Mitchell's online. I'm not so sure that these don't have a fee-based service. You know, so you can say, look, I want to download all the information about how to replace or repair my sunroof, and you pay a certain amount and you can get all the information.
Or I'll tell you how to do it.
You can go to your repair shop if they have Mitchell's or Alldata. You can ask them to print it out for you.
That's a good one.
That's right? An easy
because
one.
if you just start ripping out the headliner and start indiscriminately going, I mean, I couldn't tell you how to take this thing out. I've never taken one out, and I don't think I want to. So when you learn how to do it, call me. And let me know what you've run into. But
your mechanic somewhere has all this stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, so you could probably drive to Anchorage to go to the Toyota dealer. How far away is that?
250 miles.
Okay, you're not doing that. Okay.
Well, I will. If it worse comes to worse, I'll take it to Anchorage.
But how much volcanic ash must there have been?
Oh. We got a lot. We had inches. The day turned dark and the clouds blew in and it was eerie.
For how long?
It blew up pretty much all spring.
Why do you live there?
Oh, this place is beautiful. We had like 20 inches of snow last night. The lights went out. It was exciting.
It's the excitement. it's that Shelley against nature thing.
You know, Homer, Alaska, the land of fast women and beautiful dogs.
Enough said.
Okey-dokey, I give up.
Well, Shelley, give yourself plenty of time. This is not a simple job to take the sunroof out.
No.
So you're apt to be at this for many days.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's time to bust out the duct tape.
It might be. That 250-mile ride to Anchorage might be looking better and better. Anyway, good luck. Let us know you make out.
Thanks a lot.
We'll send you an emergency roll of duct tape.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk. You have to admit, we do get some of the more interesting people on the planet calling from Alaska.
Oh, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
And I have to every time ask myself, if not them, what are you doing up there?
Well,
they love it. Don't forget, none of them were born up there.
No, they
all... They all moved there.
Exactly. In fact, the people who were born there have moved out. Oh, boy. Hello, by the way. You're on Car Talk.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your name?
My name is Scott. I'm from Havertown, which is just outside of Philadelphia, PA.
Hi, Scott.
And my problem may seem a little paltry after volcanic fallout.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a 99 Ford Ranger. It's got 256,000 miles on it.
Great.
Wow.
My question to you is, in her declining years, what is better for her? I have two ways to go to work. One is through the city, which is 20 miles, and one is around the city, all highway, which is 40 miles. And I wanted to know what's better for it.
Good.
Boy, that is a good question. Does it have any other ailments? Does it burn a lot of oil? Does it leak water?
No, she's very good. She's a very good girl to me.
That's good.
Well, you know, it's probably about equivalent, I would say. And oddly enough, it may be about the same amount of gasoline, too.
It takes about the same amount of time for both.
Here's the only consideration. If you were to, sooner or later, you're going to break down with any vehicle that has 256,000, you're on borrowed time. Would you rather break down in the city or on the highway?
Probably on the highway.
Really?
Considering where I drive through, yes.
Oh, okay. So you're
driving. Well, I like the highway better anyway.
You do?
Sure.
Okay.
It's nice, smooth driving.
Well, that's true. It's less wear and tear on the ball joints and the bushings and
absolutely.
The springs and all those kinds of things.
I'd rather put on 40 miles of that.
Yeah, and I agree with Tommy. It's less wear and tear probably driving. As long as you're driving on the highway when you have to do the minimum amount of braking and accelerating. You get on, you drive a steady speed, and you're at work.
Sure.
Tommy solved this problem with his car because he had the same kind of dilemma.
Yeah.
And he decided just to stop going to work.
Yeah.
He parked his car for 3 years.
That worked out well.
So that's solution number three, Scott. 20 miles on the city, 40 miles on the highway, or stay home.
I'm not sure I have that option.
But I would agree with Tommy that the 40 miles on the highway, assuming you're using about the same amount of gasoline, is probably less wear and tear in the truck than the 20 miles in the city. So go for it.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean.
All right. Thanks for your call. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Look, before we get to this week's new puzzler, we have to take a very short break.
Speaking of the puzzler, I got a letter this week about the puzzler. You want to hear it?
It depends. Does it start with, you knuckleheads?
No. This is one of those rare letters that doesn't. It's from George Wolford, and he says this. I teach graduate statistics at Dartmouth College. Dartmouth College!
Wow, man!
I was right. Whenever you guys give out a mathematical puzzler, I assign it as homework. Mm. It saves me the trouble of having to think up something myself.
Well, now I'm convinced that this letter is authentic. It's definitely from a college professor, Ivy League, no doubt about it.
Well, he has a request for us. He says, I wonder if you could do me one favor. From now on, could you send me the answers in advance?
Yeah, right.
I hate to make the poor students wait a whole week for their grades.
Jeez, you know, that was thoughtless of us, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, instead of sending him the answers, we'll just do the grading.
Of course, there you go. Call the dean and rat him out, will you?
So, is this week's puzzle mathematical, or is Professor Wolford on his own this week?
No, it is not mathematical, unfortunately, and he is on his own. This happens to be from my home improvement series.
All right. We'll be back with that and lots more of your car questions in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
She was much faster when we first met. Been together so long, will you take what you can get? She's still got high beams and a pristine oil pan. There's just one thing that I cannot understand. Carburetor, carburetor, well, you are the great frustrator, keeping her from doing all the things she did when young. Carburetor, carburetor, well, you make me wanna hate her. I thought mechanics had more fun. Baby won't run.
And even though our avatars beg us to delete them whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new puzzler, which I said was from my home improvement
series.
Well, you know, after many years of my asking my wife to hold the flashlight for me while I did various home improvement jobs around the house, she finally decided to buy me last Christmas a cute little light, which is basically a plastic sphere with a light in it, and the outside of it is studded with a bunch of magnets so that wherever you're working, if it's in the proximity of a magnetic surface, you can stick this thing someplace and orient it so that the light is shining at what you're working on and not in your eyes.
Wow.
And my wife doesn't have to hold the flashlight anymore.
Yeah.
Cute little thing. Well, the other day I was engaged in cleaning off one of the top shelves in my workshop, and as you might guess, this thing falls to the ground.
Oh.
And it breaks in half. It's the sphere.
Now you got two of them.
No.
That didn't work.
That didn't work. So what flies out is the battery, the light bulb, the switch comes apart, a couple of spring contacts. And I pick up all the pieces, or at least I think I pick up all the pieces, and I start to put it back together.
Yeah.
And I said, I couldn't quite figure out how it worked. And I thought it would be a considerable investment of time to get this thing all back together. And I said, wait a minute. Before I spend a lot of time figuring how this thing goes back together, let me test the light bulb to see if it works.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to test the bulb, it's an unusual bulb. It's got two wires about an inch long each connected right to the bulb, a bulb that I'd never seen for sale anyplace. So I knew if the bulb were blown out,
you're done for.
There's no sense in trying to fix the light.
Yeah.
So I connect one wire to one end of the battery and the other wire to the other end of the battery, and it doesn't light. And I say, oh, Raymond, you're a genius.
Yeah.
You would have wasted an hour putting this stupid thing back together, and imagine how disappointed you would have been.
Yeah.
So I take all the pieces, and I throw them in the trash. A half an hour later, I say, aha.
Uh-huh.
And I go back and retrieve the pieces. Why would I do that? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of two size medium Arc'teryx Fission SV jackets.
Two? You're getting one for me, too.
No, they're both for me. I'm wearing one on top of the other this winter. Anyway, write it on two Arc'teryx Fission SV insulated waterproof all-mountain jackets with die-cut Velcro cuffs, Gore-Tex shell, micro-seam allowance, and zipper garage. Zipper garage? And send them to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
Now, if you have a question about your car, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sarah from Floyd, Virginia.
Hey, Sarah. What's up?
Sarah with an H at the end?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, we're with you.
I have a 93 Honda Civic, which I am trying to figure out whether I can drive to Savannah after Christmas.
How long a ride is this?
It's about a six-hour drive.
Six-hour drive, okay.
How many miles on this car?
Just over 245,000.
You will absolutely make it. Look, it's gone 245,000 miles. What's another 300 miles?
Well, it's had a setback recently, which I'm wondering whether might be affecting it.
Okay, what is it?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I backed it into a tree.
Uh-huh.
And since then, it's developed some symptoms. I wrote down the list of symptoms, which I'm sure aren't related, but to somebody like me, they sound related.
It didn't fall on the car or anything like that?
Oh, no, no, no. This was, I was just backing up in the morning. I was going maybe 5 miles an hour at the fastest. It was not a big collision. It was very minor.
What was the diameter of this tree?
Maybe a foot.
A foot. Oh, a sapling.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
Go ahead.
The things that it's been doing since I crashed it into the tree, they've sort of started incrementally, bit by bit.
Okay.
In the morning when I start it, it kind of clunks, and then there's kind of a rattling sound.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you start it?
Yeah, and it seems like it's really just the first start in the morning, like when it's kind of cold. The rest of the day, I don't hear it so much when I'm starting it.
Okay.
It's idling very rough and running rough. It's the power has decreased. I live in the mountains, so I go over a lot of hills. Mm-hmm. And the power has decreased. And then my gas mileage, which, of course, with a Honda Civic is really good, has gone down noticeably. Mm. And I smell exhaust in the car.
What's damaged at the back of the car? Can you see?
Basically just my signal light. And the trunk is a little dented, but I can still open and close it.
Is there any way that exhaust fumes could be getting into the trunk?
Possibly. I mean, it still seems like it's watertight.
So you haven't taken this to any mechanic?
No.
You know, she's got 245,000 miles. This car is barred from every shop.
I don't even fill the gas tank anymore. Are you kidding?
So was it immediate? Did you crash the car on purpose?
No. I was having a bad morning, and it was just the tree snuck up on me.
The tree snuck up on you.
They do that.
Is it possible that the engine was not running perfectly okay before you had the accident?
If it wasn't running that great, I didn't notice it yet.
See, I was thinking that maybe you somehow crimped the exhaust system.
You
should be able to see the tailpipe.
Mm-hmm.
And the tailpipe is on the, I believe on this car, is on the passenger side of the car.
That sounds right. I'd have to be looking at it, though.
Okay, is that where the accident was?
No, I hit the driver's side.
Okay, then the tailpipe must be on the driver's side. I don't know which side it is, but whatever, you want to be able to look at the tailpipe and see if it's mushed in.
Okay.
If it is, it's possible that you have now a restricted exhaust.
Okay.
And if you have restricted exhaust, that could account for the rough idle, the rough running, the loss of power, the clunks and the rattles. All of that could be, and the smell could be all attributed to having done something like crimping one of the exhaust pipes by hitting the tree.
Okay.
So you could do, Sarah, one-stop shopping here. You could go to one shop, have them put the car on the lift, and just look at the exhaust system.
Okay.
If the exhaust system is intact, then what you did was probably completely unrelated.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Alternatively, this was the left rear that hit the tree.
Yes.
Yeah. Alternatively, you could try hitting that same tree with the right front.
See what happens. Put
everything back into alignment. But I would take it someplace. I'm guessing it had nothing to do with the accident.
Okay.
I'm guessing it's a coincidence.
Okay.
All of those things, by the way, the clunks, the rattles, the rough idle, and the loss of power could also be attributed to a cylinder that's misfiring.
Okay.
You know, so you could need just a tune-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, by the way, I'm guessing also the exhaust smell is coming from the fact that you're getting incomplete combustion, and you may not have a leak per se, but when you're sitting at idle, the fumes that are coming out the tailpipe are kind of enveloping the car and making it smell really bad.
Okay.
All right.
But I would be a little worried about a six-hour ride.
Well, okay, in this condition, I would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're smelling exhaust all the time, you could get carbon monoxide poisoning.
Okay.
That's not good.
That's not good. But make sure that whoever checks your car checks to make sure that there's no exhaust getting into the car.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
See you, Sarah.
All right. Great. Thanks, guys.
Drive with the window open just to be safe.
Okay, I will.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, my name is Scott Lepore. I live in Amelia Island, Florida.
Amelia Island.
It's like north of Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
What's up, Scott?
Well, I got a 97 Volkswagen Jetta. I've had it for probably a good maybe 7 years, and the last three of those years, I have not had reverse in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was tough. One afternoon, I pulled into my parents' house, and their driveway is kind of it's a hill, and I pulled into the garage. And then I did whatever I had to do, and then I went to leave and put it in reverse, and I couldn't, it just wouldn't go.
Is this a standard shift?
No, it's an automatic.
It's an automatic.
Yeah, okay. So reverse is basically like neutral now.
Okay.
And so did you take it to the repair shop?
No, I didn't, because at that point, I pretty much vowed that I wasn't going to put any more money into this vehicle, because that's pretty much all I had been doing.
Uh-huh.
So all this time, you've only been making friends with people who have circular driveways.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
I know it.
Well, the thing that's saving you is that where you are, there aren't any hills.
Exactly. But a friend of mine was saying something about linkage, and it could be an easy fix.
It could be, and you're not going to know that until you take it. Either it's going to be external or internal. There's no way we can tell, you know, but you can take it to the repair shop and say, hey, if it's something external, how much is it going to cost to fix it? And if they say they can't, then you're going to have to either rebuild or replace that transmission.
Gotcha.
Which, you don't, you know, I can tell you're not going to want to do.
No, not at all.
What if there was some way, let's assume that the transmission does need to be rebuilt or replaced, and it's going to cost you, I don't know, $2,000. You're clearly not going to do that.
Yeah.
No.
But what if you had, like, a motorized roller skate or something?
Yeah.
Something that you could open the door and propel,
press a button.
Press a button and have a little electric motor.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I've got it. A winch.
Oh, no.
Well, I remember many years ago, when I had a Chevy, it was a beautiful Chevy. Someone had left it in the garage because they didn't.
This is the way my brother gets all his cars. Someone abandons a car.
Someone abandoned the car and then didn't want to mess with it anymore.
Because it was a what? A hopeless piece of junk.
And I got it so that it ran, but I couldn't get reverse to work. And I drove that thing for years, always remembering that I couldn't back up.
And I remember him calling me from time to time, help!
Once in a while, if I wasn't really awake, I would do something stupid, and I'd have to. Oh. I would need reverse.
That explained the last 5 years. So you could. I recommend
you can get by without.
You can get by without reverse, but a winch might come in handy.
A winch is good.
Okay.
So you can wrap that thing around a tree and pull yourself back, and then just remember to unhook it before you take off.
Oftentimes, I just find myself, if I have to, I put my back right up against the door frame with the door open, and I just step it back.
Sure.
There you go. Well, I think,
you know what?
There
are so many ways.
Yeah.
There may be a category in the Guinness Book of World Records. You should check before you fix this thing.
Okay.
The greatest number of years without reverse. Check it out, man. You might be eligible for put your name in eternity.
You know, that's good thinking.
Yeah, I know that. See you, Scott.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888.
And it was fun driving that car, because I remember every time I get into trouble, the first thing I would do would be laugh.
Yeah.
I laugh because I was so stupid.
Nobody else laughed, though. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Janelle from Ithaca, New York.
Janelle, what's going on, Jen? Is that J-E-N-E-L-L-E or J-E-A-N-E-L-L-E?
J-A-N-E-L-L-E.
Janelle, got it. From Ithaca, you said?
Ithaca, New York, yeah.
Okay, what's going on, Janelle?
So I used to drive a Toyota Prius, and the lights go off automatically on them, but now I've got two kids, and I drive the Toyota Sienna. The first time I took it out, I went to the mall, left the lights on, and my battery died. So I had to flag down people in the mall parking lot, and it was a big ordeal trying to find somebody with jumper cables who knew how to use them. So anyway, I was shopping a few weeks ago, and I found this thing that is called an Easy Start Battery Charger. It's made by the American Red Cross, and you apparently plug it into your cigarette lighter, and you can charge your car.
Oh, this thing's got your name on it, Janelle. Even spelled correctly, too. No, in fact, it's exactly for those kinds of situations where you've run down the battery by leaving the headlights on.
Really? That's fantastic, because I thought maybe it was just bunk.
Well,
but,
if, for example, you left the headlights on for a day and ran the battery down to nothing, this thing would not start your car. But if you've left them on to the point where they've just weakened the battery a little bit, so that when you come back from your shopping, the lights are on, but they're real dim.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's probably what you found. And you say, oh, what are the first two words out of your mouth? I bet that one of them is, oh. So you turn the lights off, and you try to start it, and it goes click, 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 and it won't start because there's not 12 volts on the battery anymore. What this thing does is it gives the battery enough of a boost through your cigarette lighter to maybe start the car. I think it's probably a 50-50 chance that it starts, which is better than nothing.
That's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to go to the next step, for not a whole lot more money, you can buy something called a jump pack, which is something that you actually have to hook up to the battery, like jumper cables.
Okay.
But it has a much larger capacity and can, in fact, start the thing if it's almost stone dead.
Okay, that's great.
And there are very expensive ones. You know, the ones we have at the shop cost several hundred dollars, but they have the most powerful batteries. You need a cheap one.
Just so I'm not stranded with two kids in Ithaca winter, right?
Exactly. You know, and you'll judge your need by how... You know, and, by the way, I mean, I think every car should shut the headlights off when you turn the damn key off. I mean, it's stupid that in this day and age...
Right?
Yeah. Well, of course, the thing was ding, ding, dinging at you, but you didn't hear that.
No, it didn't ding, ding, ding at me. That's the thing. That's why I didn't know.
It should be ding, ding, dinging.
Well, I bought it used. Maybe the ding, dinger.
Oh, maybe some.
Oh, the ding, dinger wasn't working.
That's why it got traded in. The dinger conked out. They said, that's it. We can't take it anymore. Well, in that case, then you're absolved. So clearly you're not going to remember to turn the lights off.
No.
Yeah.
So I think you may need more than this other device. You may need to go to Plan B.
Okay, that's good to know. Maybe I'll ask for that for Christmas.
Yeah, you can get a decent one for $40, $50, $60, or you can go and spend $100 and get a real nice one, or $200 and get, you know, the Commando 8.
I'm thinking the $40 one.
Yeah, the $40 one. I think that'll do it for you.
Great.
Good luck. See you, Janelle.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Forest Lawn, Garlic Prawn, Fritted Fawn, Grape Poupon, Steam Wonton, Ice Bonbon, Mastodon, Munchathon, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our PR specialist is Hugh Lion Sack. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. Our staff brown noser is S. Terrific. Our coffee break manager is Carmela Highwater. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometry firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the adjunct baristas in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Remember this, don't drive like my brother.
And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
Whatever he said. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 951, rifle through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Or if you prefer, you can call the Shameless Commerce Division for Car Talk gifts at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a discussion about the ethics of making gas.
Should I leave the room?
No, not that kind of gas. Fuel. And specifically, ethanol.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the question of whether it's ethical to grow food and use it to power cars instead of using it to what? Feed people.
Exactly. And we don't know the answer, but a lot of our listeners have very strong opinions.
Yeah, let's see. A 10-mile drive to Walmart or a Drake's Ringding. Tough call.
Check out the discussion on the ethics of biofuels going on right now at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though vampires put in for soundproof coffin lids whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.